honestly, I pulled the plug. I quit my job.
Wow. Did you knock the door or just leave the note and walk away?
No, I left the note, Jerry. I'll be honest.
Yeah, yeah. How many times did you go to the courthouse?
In a four-month period, Jerry, I think I went 12 times, if I remember right.
Oh, my God. Now,
all right, Jamie, let's go.
Okay, yeah, so a little bit about myself. As Jerry said, my name's Jamie Allen. I'm 31 years old, 32 this month. And yeah, I'm from Leicester, England. Some of you may have heard of Leicester. If you know soccer, you know Leicester. But other than that, not a lot to say about it. But yeah, I predominantly have a structural engineering background and a soccer coaching background. And I moved full-time to America back in 2021, the summer of that. Now, due to my visa restrictions, I wasn't allowed to work for a whole year, essentially. So with that in mind, I worked back home throughout COVID. Therefore, I didn't get a lockdown. So what I learned from that is that I can't let this year just slide by because mental health's going down. A lot of people, as we know, a lot of people struggled throughout COVID. So I just knew I needed to keep this busy. So essentially, I went to kind of learn a new skill. I remember I was watching a show with my wife and someone mentioned real estate doing the license. I turned to my wife and I said, is that how real estate works? You just get the license and go? And she was like, yeah, pretty much. I was like, okay, let's look into it. And I got into that. I was just watching YouTube video after YouTube video. I've always kind of wanted to invest. It's always something I've spoke about and never really wanted to do. I've always been under the impression that, you know, you need lots of money to invest and all that kind of thing. And I found wholesaling from there. Once I found that wholesaling, you learn the basic mechanics of wholesaling in general. I think all of us know how it goes. It leads you to another video, another video, another video. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's like a drug. You just can't get enough. And, you know, someone like me, a foreigner in this country, I haven't got much of a credit rating and all that kind of thing. So I knew I had to do something big in this time to get into real estate. And with such a low entry barrier to get into wholesaling, why not? Let's give it a shot. So, yeah, I kind of went through it just through YouTube and that kind of thing. And I found wholesaling. And once I found out how I could do it and believed that I could do it, yeah, I was not looking back at that point. So, yeah.
So, Jamie, once you started down that rabbit hole of learning what it is and YouTube University,
yep.
How long were you studying and learning until you were ready to then take action and start calling and making offers?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Quite a while, Jerry. I'll be honest with you. So I would say it was around October, November time of 2021 where I was learning the wholesaling thing. I had your mentorship program, Jerry. So I had that going. And then I had my full-time job as well. And my wife, as well, I think it's worth mentioning, she has a chronic illness as well. So my time was very full. This is another reason I did wholesaling. I wanted to not be able to ever work again. And this is why I wanted to do what I do. But with that being said, I had a lot of not a lot of time on my plate. I had my predominant job. I was director of a soccer coaching company. I had to take care of my wife from a physical point of view. So wholesaling was really frustrating me because I'm watching all these kind of calls going on. I'm seeing all the inspirational videos going on. And I just couldn't make time to do it. So we got to around, this time last year, around January time, where I turned to my wife and said, look, I'm going to have to pull the plug here. If I want to take this seriously, I've got to take some risks here. So yeah, I pulled the plug on my job and I decided I'm going to do this full time. And that I launched around March of March 2023 is where I fully launched into wholesaling. So yeah.
Gotcha. Wow. Yeah. So you really were in the education loop or whatever you want to call it for about a year or so. But you came to that pivotal moment where you're like, okay, do or die here.
Yep.
Do I really want to do this? Am I really committed? Am I going to take this risk and the plunge into it? And so what did that look like? Did that mean quit your job or cut back on the job? Or how did you do that?
Yeah, I pulled the plug. I quit my job. It was a risk. Honestly, it was a real risk. It was one of the scariest and biggest things I've ever done. You know, it wasn't just, I'm going to drop my job and do wholesale. I'm going to become a millionaire. You know, nothing like that. It was long, it was thought out. And it was just come to a point now where I was, you know, going through the analysis paralysis kind of thing and just overthinking it. And I thought, I can sit here doing this and just, you know, tell myself how tired I am. Or I can take action. So it was a no-brainer in the end. I had to take action. I had to do what was right for me. But A lot of the experts say don't quit your job before going into it full time. So don't always take my advice, guys.
Yeah, that may not be the right thing for everybody, certainly. Yeah. So you did it. You made that plunge, and that was about March of 2023.
Right.
How long then, now that you had, like, you know, now full focus, more time, the commitment to it, how long from then to your first contract was it?
First contract. I mean, do you want me to mention the first contract I had that didn't go the whole distance? Or the
Good point. So sometimes we have contracts that never make it. Let's say I'm curious though. Yeah. First contract, yeah. How long to the first contract, and then maybe how long to the first deal that made it to the finish line?
Sure. Yeah. My first contract honestly took me about 2 weeks. Having said that though, Jerry, I went in kind of, I wouldn't say uneducated, but I kind of tried to make the deal work for me and nobody else. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I kind of went in with those high numbers.
Over contracted.
Exactly. So I couldn't get it over the line, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, you turn your losses into lessons at the end of the day. So we had that one.
Which, by the way, Jamie, that's very normal. In fact, that's, I think, very much part of the process. You know, your first deal, your first contract, sometimes your first couple contracts, you're still trying to figure out, like, what does a real deal look like? But what's cool, though, is that action and the fact that you're getting a contract, even though later it didn't end up being a deal, there's so much value in that, because what you're doing is when you sign a contract, that's the one time, that's the first point in time where you're actually doing an action step that will lead to a result. Everything else is just building up to that moment.
Thanks.
But when you execute a contract, that's when you're like, okay, here we go. Yeah. I think I've got a deal. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And that sometimes is the pivotal moment. It's not always the deal itself. It's the willingness to sign a contract that can oftentimes put you in the right trajectory. Because then hopefully what happens is you're like, okay, this wasn't a deal. I learned so many things about why it wasn't a deal. Now I can come back to my next offer, my next contract, that much better.
Definitely. No, exactly. Exactly what you said there, Jerry. So signing the contract, it was a learning process. I also made a silly mistake in hiring a GC, a general contractor, to come with me when I went to visit the house, just to price it up. Obviously, I lost a bit of money on that. It was like $50. But at the same time, I learned so much from that general contractor of what he's looking for, what this is going to cost, what this is going to cost. And that in itself gave me a great education on how I'm going to start to price up my houses in the future now too. And not only that, you know, it was just a great lesson. Like you said, signing the contract, getting into somebody's home, picking out what I'm looking for, almost an education for myself in that process. And then you're obviously going through the process of building rapport with, you know, the seller himself, because they're not going to sell to you if they don't like you. So at the end of the day, so having all that rolled into one, the contract, building rapport, how to price up this job that I was looking at, all three of those came in so handy for the future from that moment. So exactly what you
said. What about talking to some buyers? When did you discover that you actually did not have a deal on that first one?
When I put it out, so I got it under contract, and I ran my numbers, and like I say, I probably tweaked them too much just to make it work for myself more than anything. Mm-hmm. That's another lesson I took from this, you know. But yeah, with that being said, I got the deal. I put it out on every Facebook group in the world in Colorado. Yeah. And same old feedback came back from that. And I actually had a great realtor come in and sit down with me and explain to me why this deal doesn't work and these costs and, you know, several different mechanics of the deal put together. So again, another lesson from that one as well, which has, you know, really helped me in good stead for the future, you know.
Yeah. So great. So you learned a lot on that one. Okay. So then now, how long until you got the first deal that made it to the finish line?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So honestly, not long after that one, that was in a different zip code. I tried another zip code. And honestly, from that moment on after that, I would say it took me around 3 weeks after that initial contract that I didn't go over the line. I would say it took me around 3 weeks after that one to get
another deal.
Yeah, which kind of ended up being a deal after, you know, a long waited wait. But
how did you find that deal?
So, yeah, I did a technique called reverse driving for dollars. I'm sure you've heard of it, Jerry. Mm-hmm. If other mentees haven't heard of it here, reverse driving for dollars is more of a structured way of doing driving for dollars. So I would pull a list of predominantly vacant houses. They were the ones I was going for starting out. And then I would plan my route from there. So I would drive to that house, and what I'd do, I'd leave a yellow little sticky note either on the mailbox, the garage, the front door, anything like that. And I'd just leave a message on there saying, hey, my name's Jamie Allen. Have a question about your house. Give me a call on this number. And yeah, from that, I actually had my first contract, as we're talking about here. I had somebody call me and say, no, I'm not interested in selling this house, but I have another house in a different city that I'm more than interested in selling. And then it went from there. So that's how I got initially kind of
got into this deal. So I've got a couple of questions about that, because this is a fascinating technique.
Please.
So when you drove that vacant list,
yeah,
were you also door knocking? So like if someone was visibly living in the home, did you knock the door or just leave the note and walk away?
No, I left the note, Jerry. I'll be honest.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of touching on, like I said earlier, like obviously quitting my job and starting wholesale. It was the craziest and scariest thing I've ever done. Honestly, it really was. And I didn't want to really go on too many people's properties, I'll be honest with you. Yeah. And I was just scared, I'll be honest with you. So, and that's another thing, Jerry, why I did start doing this technique, this reverse driving for dollars. Obviously, I have an accent. By the way, if you can't understand me, just put it in the notes here because I have an accent. So please, feel free to ask again. But I found out real quick, Jerry, when I started cold calling those first kind of few weeks before I was doing the reverse trying for dollars, I didn't get a ton of joy, honestly. And, in my head, I was thinking, is it this? Is it that? But number one, I put at the front of that, Jerry, I have an accent. I'm making cold calls. To other people, I'm a salesman at the end of the day. So I had to kind of rethink that strategy and think, how can I get people to call me? So obviously, again, logged into YouTube University, found this technique. It's cheap. I didn't have a ton of money behind me either, Jerry. That's why it was even riskier than it should have been, really. But I didn't have a ton of money behind me. And I thought, great, I found reverse driving for dollars, putting that simple message on a sticky note, putting it on houses, boom, onto the next one from there. So I just thought, no, people are only calling me to ask the questions. I'm not bothering anyone. And it's an easy technique. It really is.
Yeah. It's great because, like you said, it took away a lot of the fear of knocking somebody's door, and but it's still taking a lot of action. When you're doing that reverse driving for dollars on that list, mm-hmm. would you also stop when you saw other distressed properties that were clearly, good deals or good driving for dollars deals?
Absolutely. Yeah. And really simple, really effective at the end of the day. So, yeah.
Now, as you grow and develop and you get more comfortable, knocking on that door and having that conversation is going to really probably allow you to convert a lot more of those leads, because now you can do that conversation and build that rapport without waiting for them to call you.
Absolutely, Jerry. Yeah. And that's a good thing as well. And by doing this, the more I did it, the more sticky notes I put out, the more conversations I had at the end of the day. Just having those conversations really does help build your confidence. And that's why I think when doing real estate as a whole, mindset is so important, to reward yourself for those small wins. Just as simple getting a call back in the early stages, it's a big, big deal. I remember getting that call back. That first call back and someone said they're interested. It's an unbelievable win. It really is a great feeling to know you're just taking that action at the end of the day.
Yeah. It's building on the wins, right? Building on the wins. So as you build more wins, you can do even bigger things.
It's just effective at the end of the day.
That's awesome.
Out there talking to people is effective. So, yeah.
So someone called on your sticky note from one of the notes you put up.
Yeah, correct. So yeah, that was down in Denver. They called me on a sticky note. Honestly, it was a really easy conversation. They called me. I said I was, just curious to see. I love the look of your house. I was just curious to see if you'd be interested in selling at all. And like I mentioned earlier, they initially said no, but I do have another rental that I own. I've owned for years that I think I want to get rid of. So, if you're interested, you can go and take a look at that one. So yeah, that was awesome. And that's, I got lucky on that one, but even that call itself, Jerry, the fact he said, oh, I have another one, that again, that's enabled me to be more proactive on the phone and say, oh, okay, I've got a no here. Do you know anyone else? Do you have any other properties? So again, just so many lessons come from so many simple things by taking action, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then you went and looked at this rental property and what happened then? Ran numbers, made an offer?
Pretty much. Yeah. So I got sent there later that week, obviously. And I got there, I had a look at the place and it had renters in. And honestly, the landlord, the seller, he'd never actually seen the place. He got this house in a quit claim deed. He'd never seen it. And he was actually paralyzed as well. So he couldn't actually go over and physically go see it. But I went there, I met his renters and oh my gosh, he had no idea what was going on at this place, but it was really beat up property. They seem like really nice people though. So obviously there's no judgment in there. We built a good relationship, good rapport on that. And I thought this is golden. This is exactly the house I'm looking for. Boom, we've got a deal here. So yeah, I built good rapport, should I say, with the tenants in there, the renters. And I said, look, I'm probably going to need to come through here a few more times, bring my contractors in, bring my partners in, et cetera. And they were cool. They said, yeah, just give me a text before and we'll let you in. So yeah, that's what happened from that part. And obviously I took pictures of the place and ran my numbers. And my numbers, to be fair, Jerry, they came in a lot higher than what I remember the seller saying on the phone. He said, yeah, I think it's worth about 200 or something. And I ran my numbers. I think it came to like 230. And I was like, oh my gosh, we have a golden deal. So, obviously I went from there and, gave my offer. Go ahead.
Did you give him the number he wanted then? Or did you try to come down on it? Or how'd you handle that?
I gave him the number I wanted. Honestly, it was my first deal. Yeah. I was just so desperate to get that deal. You know how it is.
Yeah.
Obviously, I ran my numbers there at around 230K, I believe. And I remember him vaguely saying 200 on the phone. So I thought, okay, let's go in at the 200. Yeah. I've still got a deal if he doesn't accept that. So I did. I went in at 200. He said, yeah, go ahead. So I was like, oh, my God, what's happening? So, yeah, it went from there. I sent the contract over to him. He signed it that night. I was honestly waiting on my DocuSign app like all night waiting. And he did. He got there. He did it. And we had it under contract. So obviously it's go time from here on out. It took a little bit of a turn from this moment on. So, yeah.
Yeah. So then... But you had some run-ins with the tenants, right? Or there were some. How did you handle the tenants with the cash buyer? Did the cash buyers have an issue with tenants being there? Did they want them out? Was it all okay? What happened there?
Yeah, it was an absolute mess, Jerry. I mean, I know you've read the short version of the story. The short version was still an absolute essay to read. But no, so what happened there is I sent a buyer to go in and look at it. Again, I gave the tenants a heads up and said, hey, look, got a contractor going in just to see the place. He's going to price it up for me. Like I said before, I've got a couple of more coming in. So I had two buyers go there and I had another buyer who was, ended up being the end buyer. I had him head over there and I had another buyer that was interested as well that I was going to send over there. So I remember after the third guy called him, I called the tenants and said, hey, Victor, look, I've got one more person going in there at this time tomorrow. Are you okay with that? Are you going to be in? And boom, he just turned on me just like that. He went absolute ape on me. Honestly, he went crazy. He threatened to knock me out. He threatened to do this, threatened to do everything and said, no.
Why was he upset?
Honestly, I think it was, Jerry. I think you mentioned that he initially wanted to buy the place a long time ago and was kind of fixing up to maybe buy the place. But I mean, the seller said he's never going to buy that place. I know he's not, so don't worry about him. But yeah, I think it was just a piece of the penny was dropping almost to say, oh, shoot, we might be out of here now. So the penny dropped. They wanted that house as long as they could. And yeah, he sent me all kinds of threats. He was calling me on the phone, going absolutely crazy at me. It was quite a wake up call. It's quite a lesson.
How'd you handle that with him being so belligerent?
I mean, look, at the end of the day, he called and to some extent, I guess, I understand his point of view. So I've always just tried to assure him. I let him have his rant for the day and just kind of, look, we'll come back to this tomorrow when you calm down. So I call him the next day, and yeah, he hadn't calmed down at all, honestly. So that was it. He was just letting nobody in the house.
Did he let your buyers in or no?
No, nobody. I couldn't even get anyone else in there. But I had three buyers already see it. One was really heavily interested, and he knew his price. So I've got a deal here. I know it's happening. I just need the tenant now. But no, with the tenant, Jerry, as well, we offered some solutions as well. I said, you know, we're probably going to rehab this place. So, you know, we can have you stay here for free for a couple of months if needed until you find yourself on your feet. And we also offered Jerry the classic cash for keys scenario as well. So we actually offered them $2,000 to go with, and they can stay at this house for free for 3 months. I thought that was an unbelievable gig for it. And still just wasn't having it, still really belligerent and on my case, and just wasn't having it at all. And even the seller, who, like I briefly mentioned earlier, he was paralyzed, and you know, he had a lot going on in his life too, so I really wanted to help him out for one. But tenants were even calling him up, calling him names, telling him to do this, telling him to do that, and it was just a bad situation, honestly, from that point on. So to kind of move things on from here, obviously we had no other option but to take the legal route from here. So I had to run down the courthouse with my guy James, the seller. We're still really good friends right now, by the way. We ran down the court case there. I filled out all the papers with him. It's something I never thought I'd be doing ever. But no, we filled out all the paperwork, we filed the motion, and they had to be out in 30 days. 30 days came around, they still wasn't out. So from that moment, Jerry, we had to go back to the court and we had to set up a mediation with them. Mediation were really kind to him, and they were kind enough to let me in the room too. So it was me, the seller, my good friend James, and the tenants. And oh my gosh, it was just a shouting match from the tenant. He's just, no, no, no. Yeah. And the mediator was this woman, and she was awesome, honestly. She would take anything from anyone. And she was
probably used to that.
Yeah, exactly. She she wasn't taking any of it. She was being really nice to him at the start, and she just realized what kind of guy this was. She says, you know what? You're gonna pay him all his rent back. You're going to be out in 3 days. I mean, she just literally cut the cord and went.
Whoa.
Yeah. So guess what happened after that, Jerry? 3 days went by, no rent's paid. They're still in the house.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're still in there. So again, caught another court trip. We went through the courts, and, you know, later down the line, it was all filed and it was passed. So they had to get out, and they did. They had another 30 days to get out, Jerry. And this was a 3 month period, by the way. I'm skipping a lot of details on this story.
Yeah.
This was a 3 month period. This was over 12 trips to the courthouse. The courthouse.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The courthouse from my place was 40 minutes away.
Oh my gosh. Was your buyer just being patient?
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily as well. Yeah. I probably missed that side out of it, but no, luckily our buyer, Brian, he was being super patient throughout the whole thing. He understood what was happening, and he's a big buyer as well. So he had plenty of projects to focus on. He knew this was a really good deal too. And I was lucky to have such a good buyer under my belt.
So he was fine to wait until you got the tenant out.
Yeah. So I got really lucky with that one as well. But again, I think it was a testament to how good the deal was too. You know, I found a great deal. So I think it was a testament to that.
So how many times did you go to the courthouse?
In a 4 month period, Jerry, I think I went 12 times, if I remember right.
Oh,
now, let me tell you something as well, Jerry. This is how crazy it got. You know where you've got your iPhone, you get in your car and you're away from your house and it tells you how far away? Yeah,
yeah.
I remember the last time I went to court, Jerry, I got in my car and it tells me at my house how far away from the courthouse I am. My iPhone thought I lived at the courthouse. Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow. Yeah. 12 yeah. times.
12 times,
so
yeah.
Did the sheriff finally show up to throw him out, or did they leave finally?
Yeah, so that brings on to our next part. So we did get the motion filed. They had to go. And if they didn't go from there, that's where we get to the sheriff's office and we file everything with them. So we managed to do that. And still there were complications on this part, Jerry, because There was me and obviously the seller. We're going through this together. We've made a really good friendship at this point, but he's paralyzed. He's disabled. So there's not a lot of strings to his bow. So, and he's distressed. You know, this situation is absolutely killing him. You know, he sits around in his house all day, doesn't have a lot going for him. And I really wanted to help this guy out. You know, he was a really good man. And what happened there is, we filed it, and usually when you file it with the sheriff's office, it takes around, you know, a month or two to come through.
Yeah.
And the weeks are going by, so I've called the sheriff's office again and said, hey, look, you know, how are we looking? And they said, look, we're really behind. We're probably going to take another 3 months. And I was like, oh, my gosh. Are you kidding me? Yeah. So I explained everything and just kind of really, you know, hammered home how important it was to the seller and his situation. And, you know, fortunately for me, 2 days later, it actually calls the seller to get it going, which was great. So obviously he heard my story, he heard everything to do with it, and he called the seller to arrange the eviction, which was great. Now, again, another sting in the tail, Jerry, my seller, my guy, James, he wasn't in a good mood this day because the sheriff's told him, look, we can do it in 2 days, but you need to get 15 people together. And oh my gosh, mate. Yeah, my seller was like, oh my God, I can't do this. Bye. And I was like, and I called the seller after the sheriff called him and he told me what happened. I said, you just hung up and left him at that. I was like, oh my gosh.
How long was that whole process until they finally got out?
Yeah. So from the day they got out, we closed 2 days after that, 4 months in total.
4 months and 12 trips to the courthouse.
Yeah, but even the day of eviction, Jerry, it was absolute chaos. Honestly, it was insane. It really was. We rocked up to the house there. We had our 15 people together in the end. I'm not from here. I barely know 15 people here. Well, I do now, but I didn't at this time. But yeah, we got our 15 people together. I remember we rocked up to the sheriff and he said,
why 15 people to throw all the stuff out, or why 15 people?
To get all the eviction out, because it comes to eviction, guys, the sheriff will tell you what you need to do, how many people you need to get there to get all the stuff out. And they put you on a time limit, too. This isn't like a thing. This is all really intense and has to be done quick time. So, yeah, they told us we need 15 people together to get everything out on that day, and then it's yours. You're done. So, yeah, back to where I was. I pulled up to the sheriff. I said, hey, sheriff. And he said, have you got your 15 people? I said, yeah. He goes, well, I haven't got all day, so let's hurry up. I was like, okay. And so essentially, this is how it happened, Jerry. So we're at the corner of the road, and he said, you guys wait around the corner. I'll go and knock on the door, and I'll let you know when I call you in. So we're just waiting around the corner watching it. It's so funny.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right? It's so crazy. And then this
it's
is
like a reality TV show.
That's how it felt, honestly. I should have videoed it myself, honestly.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so he went in the house. And when he went in the house, Jerry, he was in there for a little while. Oh, my gosh, cop car after cop car, riot van after riot van. The whole street is covered in no less than like 8 law enforcement vehicles. It was crazy.
What did he find in there?
I mean, I know from experience, because I went in there, there was all kinds of weapons. I knew it was kind of, I'm not sure you're allowed to say the phrase anymore, but I knew it was a crack house as soon as I went into the house. So I think they found all kinds of narcotics and just illegal stuff. And it got to the point where, yeah, we seen the actual tenant in there who was threatening me, the tenant who gave us all a hard time. He was the one in handcuffs getting into that riot truck. So, yeah.
I mean, didn't he know this day was coming to, like, you know, clean up his act?
No, he didn't. The sheriff didn't tell him. He said, look, we've done mediation, we've done court cases, we've done several different motions. This guy still has an out. It's final straw now. Once it's eviction day, you've got nothing to say. Your stuff's getting taken out.
Wow. So they busted him for all kinds of illegal activity in the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a lot of animals being taken out of that house as well, Jerry. A lot of animals and a lot of people that, honestly, there was only 2 people down on the initial rental agreement. There was about 12 people in this house, Jerry. And honestly, it got to the point where the neighbors were all thanking us because they couldn't believe these people were finally going. They said these have given us grief the whole time. There's only like 5 houses on this particular street. All of the neighbors came out and thanked me for all this. So it was crazy.
Oh, yeah. So once the cops hauled them away, did you still have to go in and put all their stuff to the curb?
Well, that was it. Yeah. So what happened there is we Obviously, the main tenant got into the cop car. The rest of the tenants, his friends who we were with, were just sat on the curbside. And yeah, they sent us in, 15 of us. We're just taking item after item out and leaving it on the lawn, on the front lawn. And the officer said, look, they've got 12 hours until they can get their stuff off this. No, sorry, 24 hours till they can get this stuff from the front lawn. If they don't get it in time, it's all yours. So, yeah.
And I mean, it's going to be hard to get your stuff when you're probably in jail. Well, I guess this would be the buyer now. Did the buyer have to just haul that stuff to the trash, or who knows?
Well, no, luckily the tenants that were there that wasn't meant to be there, that were living in the house with them, they were, like I say, there was like 10 of them there sitting curbside. So they just kind of took all their stuff.
As quickly as they could. Okay. So, yeah. And then you closed a couple of days later. So the one thing we didn't ask here, I'm dying to know, what did you assign this for? What was your price to the buyer?
So I did JV on this one because it was my first deal. And honestly, I didn't fully know what I was doing. I was so nervous. And I had two houses under contract that I didn't get over the line on this one. But I JV'd with a partner. And we actually ended up selling it for $247. And we went 50-50 on that split.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Good. So that paid your gas money and like $10 an hour for going to the courthouse 12 times.
Yes, sir. It certainly did. But obviously the good thing is about this one, this isn't the first contract I closed on. This was the first one I got under that ended up closing. But luckily in the meantime, I had to be proactive and I had to say, look, this is going to take a long time. I need to take action and still keep going out there and still find my deal. So I think I closed 4 deals in that time before closing that end one.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I kind of have a bad signal right now, but that is one of the wildest stories, Jamie, I've ever heard about, you know, getting a deal to the finish line. You know, though, I admire your persistence, and sometimes that's all, it just takes that like constant solve the next problem. And now look at your, probably an expert in eviction law in Colorado, at least. What's next for you in 2024?
Yeah, so we're looking to, well, me, myself, especially, I'm looking to really ramp up this year. We had a good first year start in wholesaling, you know, very minimal marketing. So obviously I've got a nice budget behind me now. Really planning on, you know, scaling the business, especially in the probate section. I've got some really good marketing ideas in this one that I'm really excited about executing this year. And also I'm deep in the process now of getting my first flip myself now. So I'm in the process of locating some private money lenders too. Anyone watching, they want to help me out here. If you know of anybody that might want to be involved in a good investment opportunity with me, feel free to forward on my details or forward them on to me. Because, yeah, I'm in the private money stage, raising some private capital to, go and get my first flip under. So I'm excited.
Yeah, we'll put your contact info below, you know, when we air this video and people can reach out to you. But that's great. Good for you, Jamie. Super proud of you. Super excited for you.